As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Accelerating your fandom, this is Flash TV Talk.
Welcome to Flash TV Talk, the fan podcast dedicated to revisiting the classic 90s series, The Flash. I'm Bo.
And I'm Belle.
Belle, man, how are you doing tonight?
Well, cedar season here in Texas is kicking up, and I am already suffering.
Oh yeah, this is a thing.
So here's the deal, right? You either get cedar fever immediately upon moving here, 2 years after moving here, 7 years after moving here, or you never get it at all.
I don't know what this is. I assumed like this was some sort of pun for people putting up Christmas trees, but cedar fever is a thing.
Yeah, it's cedar pollen in the air, and it just wreaks havoc. So I've never had like allergies to anything, like, you know, getting, you know, food allergies, plant allergies, you know, all that kind of, never had that in Mississippi. I moved here, first 7 years, nothing. And then the seventh year I was here, I just woke up one morning and I felt like I got hit by a Mack truck. I thought I had the flu. It was awful. And then I went to my doctor and they're like, yeah, it's cedar fever.
Wow. Okay. Well, no, this has not happened to me, but Belle, I've been locked up in my house for like almost a year at this point. So
it doesn't matter. These really? Things, look, this stuff. You know, not even Star Labs security could keep it out. Wait, hold on.
That's bad.
Oh, yeah, brilliant. It's in the air. It's very small and it just comes in everywhere. So like being indoors, unless you're in a hermetically sealed environment, you will be exposed to it.
It turns your house into Star Labs is what you're saying.
Yes.
Or at least your immune system into Star Labs.
Yes.
Okay. No, that's not something any of us need right now, but man, I hope you'll be feeling healthy and feeling good, because man, we got some good healthy fun here on the horizon over at Flash TV Talk. Of course, it is that time of year again for Grandma Esther's eggnog induced Christmas call-in extravaganza, but we are doing things way different than we've done in years past. Now, for folks that have just tuned in for this podcast for the 90s retrospectives who are not familiar with us or what we do before all that, welcome. We do this thing every year called Grandma Esther's Eggnog Induced Christmas Call-In Extravaganza, dedicated to Grandma Esther West and her amazing eggnog that will knock you out after one sip. That is the kind of thing that needs to be celebrated every single year, and it's something that we have done with a call-in show during our CW Flash reviews. However, this year, we felt a little far away from Grandma Esther, to be honest. It's been a while.
She's quarantining.
She's quarantining. She's in deep quarantine. I'm pretty sure she's dead, Belle. So I'm pretty sure she's been dead for several years. But maybe not. Maybe Grandma Esther was quarantining the entire time, which is just amazing if that's the case. I'm still waiting for that Grandma Esther prequel. We hear all of these new like CW in-universe spinoffs and everything. Where's the Grandma Esther's prequel to The Flash? That's what I want to know, CW.
I mean, at the very least, the Legends should be able to go back in time and, like, visit her.
And then she should come on as a fan favorite and then take over the ship. And then it's just the Grandma Esther show. And that would be amazing. That would be the next TV talk, Mel. That would...
Grandma Esther TV talk.
Amazing. Absolutely. Well, no. All right. Look, we're doing something fun. We're having a kind of a holiday party, encouraging everybody to call in. There will be fun. There will be games. There'll be chatting. There'll be hanging out. We'll be speculating about anything from The Mandalorian to the Snyder cut to, you know, whatever y'all want to talk about. We'll be talking Flash, of course, and having some good times, maybe some trivia in the mix. And it'll be great. I'm really looking forward to it, and we hope that you are too. Make your plans to be there. You can join us on Saturday the 19th. That's Saturday, December 19th. Next Saturday, actually, or I guess the following Saturday. Grandma Esther's will be at 6:30 Central Time. So I'll leave it to you to do the time travel working out for all of your various time zones. But 6:30 on Saturday 19th, December 19th. We would love to have you join us and be part of it. Details will be going out across our social medias and pinned to the top to make sure that you all get them. So stay tuned for that, and that'll be a lot of fun. In the meantime, Belle, we have got quite the episode to dive into this week as we go retrospectively back to Earth 90, as we have been doing for the last several weeks. Are you ready to dive into this one?
I am.
All right, man. Let's get into it. Let's jump into The Rundown.
The Rundown.
Episode 5 of Season 1, Double Vision, directed by Gus Terkonis, and written by... What did I say?
You said Terkonis. I think it's Terkonis.
That's Terkonis. It's like Harry Potter, right?
Did we make that joke last week?
I think so, but it's a good one. I don't know. Are you hearing double?
Hey-o.
Directed by Gus Terkonis and written by...
Jim Trombetta.
Belle, what happened to this episode?
Well, Barry attempts to foil the kidnapping of Paloma Aguilar, daughter of DEA agent Peter Paul Aguilar, who is scheduled to testify against Drug Lord Ruben Calderon. However, Calderon's enforcer, Marcos Trackman, utilizes a potentially fatal advanced microscopic device to control Barry's nervous system and force him to help them kidnap Paloma before Tina manages to jam the device's signal. Barry and Tina then race against time to prevent a brainwashed Paloma from murdering her father while under Trackman's control, and once he's defeated, he agrees to testify against Calderon, leading to Calderon's conviction.
Dun, dun, dun. All right, Belle, one of the things I am picking up on, I mean, we're 5 episodes in here, and there's some consistency I am seeing in the way that these stories are structured. Specifically in the density that exists in this, like, jam-packed characters, backstories, development, like all of these details. Like, you don't get TV like this anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? I mean, like, I've been talking about this the whole season. Just, you know, the episodes have these really, like, thick storylines in them, and it's really neat.
And I mean, like, there's some of that that is par for the course for the era. You know, oftentimes I think about, like, you know, sitcoms in particular, right? Like the, you know, the multi-camera situation, and they're on the stage, the sound stage, and it's like, oh, hey, so-and-so, who's like a dear family friend who 6 seasons in, we've never met before this day. You know what I mean? Like, that was like a trope back in the day.
Yeah. And, like, you know, characters going upstairs and never coming back down again.
That's a whole nother thing. The exploration of the forgotten children of television could be an entire podcast unto itself. But no, you know, I mean, like, that there is that whole, you know, like, you know, oh, hi, ha ha ha, yes, it's Uncle Bill, who, you know, comes over every Thursday, except not for the last, you know, 3 years for whatever reason, but he's back from his 3-year sabbatical, and we love him so much and have this deep connection. So don't be surprised when he dies 5 seconds from now. Like, that was like a thing. And so, you know, what I love about The Flash is, rather than the kind of campy nature of kind of throwawayness, because we're in the first season, it doesn't feel like any kind of relationship or dynamic is forced, right? Like, we are getting introduced to people from Barry's past. We're getting introduced to people from Barry's present. We're getting introduced to, you know, the communities of Central City, and everything feels relatively organic. But even beyond that, it also feels very fleshed out. The density that exists in these episodes really kind of give the sense in which it's a lived-in world, a world in which it is populated by characters and characters with history. And I got to tell you, it makes it kind of like a you know, kind of like writing a paper for what's the thing you have to do for university, Bell University, when you write a paper?
Research papers?
Yeah, it's like a research paper every single week in this episode. Like, okay, this person's related to this person who's connected to this person, but they're not related and they don't like this person who has a tangential connection to this other person who wants to kill this guy, but he's hiring this other guy that we haven't met until this episode to do it, who is related to this guy and has a whole thing with this girl. And also Tina and Barry still not dating in this episode.
I mean, it seems like Tina thinks they're dating, and it seems
that's
Barry
a whole
doesn't.
Other thing. Yeah. But no, yeah. Density. That was my point that I was trying to land on.
Yeah. No, I agree. But it is. It's not like there's not like huge swaths of exposition, right? Like the density is unpacked organically, I feel.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's one of those where it's like, you know, a second viewing might reveal something. We're like, oh, okay, that's cool. But like, not knowing that from the first viewing doesn't really detract from the episode. You know, it's nice. It's really like, cause you know, you hate that where it's like you were saying earlier, oh yeah, this is Uncle Bob. He's in town now and we all love him. And, or like, yes, this was this thing. And here's 15 minutes of exposition while I explain to the audience, you know, what's going on. Or, you know, the classic one where it's like, oh, I mentioned some technical term, and then the other characters are like, oh, do you mean this, 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 and this? And it's like, of course, you knew that. You're a scientist as well. It's like, audiences can infer things from context clues. Like,
right,
you don't have
exactly
to spell everything out. And I just feel like maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's a modern TV thing, but...
They think we're stupid these days. Back then, they didn't think we were stupid.
I guess. I mean, at least as far as following plots and like different technical terms and things like that are concerned, because you see that everywhere now where it's like characters explain these things that they should know. And so it takes me out of it.
And after
personally.
The commercial break, too, which is the most infuriating thing in modern television, because like most of us go back and binge watch with no television, or rather with no commercials. And like every single break, it's like, let's restate the entire plot of this episode so that we know exactly where we are at this point in time.
Oh, that is the most jarring thing when you're watching a show with no commercials. And like,
can't stand that.
You can see where the commercial break comes in, and then it comes back and they just restate what happened like the 5 minutes before the commercial break.
Yeah. No, because this is why these streaming service series are killing it versus, you know, in terms of quality, is because they're not trying to like spoon feed story to people. They do it once, you know, all the way through. And not breaking it up for an antiquated, you know, monetization system. But that's a whole other thing. Anyway, yes, Bell, you're exactly right. These days they spoon feed it to us. But here's the thing. I kind of am stupid. And I do benefit from that spoon fed nature. I realize this. It's one of the things. I hate that they're treating me like this. But at the same time, I recognize that I kind of need it. Or at least I mildly, you know, appreciate it from a note taking standpoint.
But, you know, it's like if they're explaining... I don't know. Like in the, you know, CSI shows or different things like that, where they're talking about XYZ thing, you can explain it through context clues. You don't have to spell everything out to the letter. It's so weird to hear a character talking to another character who are in the same field or an adjacent field and who should have this knowledge, reciting the dictionary definition of what that thing is that they're talking about.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. But one of the things, man, is this. This show, it's willing to you know, kind of provide a lot of those context clues as you go about the storyline, and you know the characters they've introduced throughout the way I feel are really strong. One of the other things that I have noticed 5 episodes in that we get is this weird combination of like campy hijinks and campy like over the topness, especially with some of these villains, mixed in with like very real world terrifying stakes, right? Like she talks about the bad guy butchering her mom. Like that's not,
and her brother.
Yeah, that's not like a you know, oh, zapped him to the fourth dimension. Like, no, that's horrible. That is horrible.
Yeah, like the Dragon Ball Z treatment of, yeah, no, her mother and her brother were sent to another dimension. They're fine. They're just in another dimension. No. They were cut to pieces and they are dead.
Yeah.
And that's
butchered.
Butchered.
That's butchered. That's crazy. Yeah.
And that's what the stakes are for her and her father. You know, should this guy not, should not Marcos,
Trackman?
Peter.
Yeah,
Peter Aguilar. Should he not testify? Like, that's the stakes. This guy is out there, and he is a murderer, and he is a bad. It's not just, you know, oh, he's just a drug lord, blah blah blah. Like this sort of just loose bad guy kind of thing. It's like, no. He is a he's bad. Like, he bad.
Yeah, he bad. You know? He bad. This is true. Man, bringing in, you know, in order to do the job, he brings in Marcus Trachman. All right. So let's talk about Marcus Trachman here. First of all, I love the idea that the Flash, a running superhero, goes up against Trachman.
I didn't pick up on that.
I don't know if that was a reach or intentional, but I saw that and I thought that was pretty great. Trachman, man, I'm getting some pretty strong thinker vibes from this dude. I mean, aesthetically, of course, because he's got the things on his face and whatnot. But what do you think?
No, my mind was elsewhere. And I think it's kind of interesting that we are watching this episode, which is very cyberpunky to me, right? Like, they got the Nintendo Power Glove that's like been modified, and the crazy goggles that he can, like, you know, see stuff, and he's obviously got cybernetic enhancements. And then tomorrow, Cyberpunk 2077 is coming out, like, you know, this big huge cyberpunk world. And I don't know, I really like Cyberpunk, and so I've been thinking about that game, and you know, seeing this dude, I was like, that's kind of weird that, you know, I'm watching this episode the day before Cyberpunk comes out.
Right.
But I didn't get thinker vibes. Really, the only character I got thinker vibes from was Tina's ex. Well, not
Tina's. You're talking about the dude that turned husband. Into the not the Hulk?
No. Tina's husband. Like, Tina's husband injected his brain with stuff. And, like, it killed him or whatever. Like, that's kind of like the breadcrumbs for the thinker that I picked up. This guy's more like of a cyberpunk sort of, like, you know, because cyberpunk was huge in the 90s, man. It was like this thing. In fact, there's a video going around the internet now of the girl from that dance movie.
I know this not. Which dance movie? There's a lot of dance movies.
Oh, gosh.
Dance movie from the 90s?
Step
Up.
What's the actress's name in that?
Step Up to the Streets.
It's not the one with Channing Tatum.
Step Up 3, the Steppening. Step to Malou, My Darling. Steppenwolf. Yeah. The Snyder Cut. Release the Snyder Cut of Step Up 4, Steppenwolf.
Yeah. But she was playing this character, and then she goes on this, like, you know, tangent about, like, what do you know about hacking? I, you know, have surfed the interwebs with the best of, and like, it's this actress, and she's really young. It's like on the Ghost Rider show. Gosh, why is it's killing me that I can't remember her name.
No, I mean, what you just said, it sounds similar. I mean, like, that was a thing. Like, I do remember, and like, all the movies had like the hacker character who's like, you know, what was the one where like the weird nerdy kid like blew some gum into his phone. He's like, now you've got free internet for life, or something like that.
Oh, no. It was that's actually based on a true thing. There was a Captain Crunch whistle that came in Captain Crunch boxes, and it produced because those payphones, they work on, like, when you push a button, it sends a frequency, right, on the phone. And so when you blew that whistle in there, it was the same frequency as of you, like, it's either the long distance code or the same frequency that's generated when you do something, and it'll basically give you free long distance. So you could, you know, dial your number, blow the whistle into the phone, and the call would connect without having to pay for it.
I still think it was kind of lame in the movie, but okay, great.
But that was a real thing. Like, they stopped selling those, and of course there are no payphones anymore, so you can't find them. But yeah, and you know, I remember, like, the cover to Wired magazine where it's like, this is the future, and it shows this guy, and he's got all these, like, you know, like, he's got a computer on his waistband. He's got, like, you know, it looks like the Google Glass, but like 90s version. So, like, it's a huge screen thing, and like a radio antenna coming out of his backpack. It you know, the 90s was like cyberpunk, and like the World Wide Web, and like all this new stuff was just everywhere, and everybody was like, you know, all happy about it. And I guess the Flash was like, we gotta do that too.
Gotta get in on this.
Yeah,
no, that's right. No, I mean, I will say this. He was very campy and over the top, but at the same time, I thought he was a really good villain. I mean, it was a fascinating scenario for the Flash to go up against. Like, the notion of him kind of having these horrific blackout moments, and there's even that one about midway through where he says to Tina, like, I've lost 8 hours, and there's this horrifying thought that, like, what can the Flash accomplish in 8 hours? You know what I mean? Like literally the world could be destroyed in that amount of time.
Yeah, like, he calls Tina and he's like, I've lost 8 hours, and then he looks outside and, like, the entire world's on fire, and he's like, oh crap.
Yeah, that was me. My bad, guys. I don't remember that, but that's why Flash doesn't drink.
And it's kind of funny because I sort of expected a Young Justice moment of them, like, you know, revealing who the Flash is, which they didn't care about at all. And then pulling his mask off and being like, I have no idea who this is.
Yeah, Justice League Unlimited. That would have been great. No, man, but no, I did. I thought that Trackman was actually a pretty good villain for him to go up against. I liked the way they tricked him into this kind of situation as well. You know, I have a feeling that this is a challenge that anybody that's kind of tackling the Flash and media, and I mean in the comics as well, has to kind of overcome, which is when you're dealing with somebody who has kind of like this godlike ability, you got to get clever, right? Like at times, even the CW Flash has not done this very well, and we've criticized him when that's the case. There was the whole like, oh, Barry, cross the streams between Heatwave and Captain Cold. It's like, or go dodge him and punch him in the face. Like, it's not that hard. Like, you've got this, right?
Yeah.
Here I feel like they're doing a good job. They're scrambling him. They get him from behind. On top of that, you know, he is still fairly new to the scene and everything. I'm digging it. I think it works.
Yeah. Julia Stiles. That's the actress. It was Julia Stiles.
And, Julia Stiles was in Step Up 4, Steppenwolf's Revenge?
Yeah, straight to DVD. She, you know, she needed to pay some debt, and, you know.
She did the CGI, didn't she? She was in the bodysuit.
Yeah, but
that's why they need to release the Snyder Cut.
Anyway, no, have you seen Steppenwolf now? He's like a lot spikier.
Yeah, I see. Okay, yeah. All right.
But no, it's Julia Stiles. She was in a Ghost Rider episode where she's taking over the school newspaper, and one of the other like girls tried to write an article about cyberpunk or something like that, and she goes on the cyberpunk rant. It's hilarious. So you should watch that. Find it on YouTube. It's if you like cyberpunk and you like the 90s, then that's right up your alley. Sorry, yeah. I don't mean to.
I feel like I need to like correct myself real quick because I thought Step Up 3, the Steppening, was a great idea for a name, but apparently there actually was a Step Up 3. It was Step Up 3D. Step Up 3D. Of course it was.
Of course it was 3D. Of course it was 3D.
In what year? 2010. I didn't need to even look that up. I could have told you that without looking it up. Yeah.
I mean,
2010.
The only 3D movie that I've watched that I think the 3D worked in, like, it was a very Harold and Kumar Christmas. And I didn't watch it in 3D, but like you could tell when there were 3D moments, right? And they were obviously done because 3D is a gimmick, and they realized that and they went with it. And I think that's the best way to utilize 3D as a gimmick to sort of break the fourth wall at your audience.
Wait, there was a Step Up 4 too? Hang on, my entire bit is ruined. The Step Up, but it wasn't called Step Up 4, although in some countries it was called Step Up 4 Miami Heat. It was Step Up Revolution. Hang on, is Step Up like the Fast and the Furious franchise of the dancing movie scene?
I was going to say the Dark Forces franchise of the dance movie scene. Because it's Dark Forces, Dark Forces 2 Jedi Knight, Dark Forces 2 Jedi Knight 2 Jedi Outcast, and then it's like Jedi Knight. the Dark Forces game trailer, or not trilogy, quadrilla, whatever it is also one that is very hard to follow. In fact, it has a bunch of names.
There was a Step Up 5?
Now, are these done by the same people?
No, wait, hang on. Step Up All In 2014, Step Up All In. You know what? I feel bad. I was making a joke about a franchise I thought was dead. And I mean, like, granted, I'm scared to Google search Step Up 6. This is a tangent. Like this is an unfortunate tangent, but hang on. We have to see this through real quick.
So just so you're aware, Save the Last Dance is the one with Julia Stiles in it. Step Up is the one with Channing Tatum in it.
That was a Step Up 6.
How many?
A Step Up 6. It was called Step Up Year of the Dance, and it was last year.
What?
The Step Up franchise is the reason we have 2020. You know what? I'm going to put it on the Step Up franchise. This shouldn't have happened.
I'm seeing five. I'm seeing Step Up, Step Up to the Streets, Step Up 3D, Step Up Revolution,
that was
and
four.
Step Up All In.
That was five. Step Up Year of the Dance is Step Up 6.
Step Up Year of the Dance. Wow.
Step Up Year of the Dance. 2019.
There's going to be a 7.
Shut the fuck.
What?
What? Are you serious?
Wait. Hold on.
You're lying to me. Why is that auto-populating in Google?
Wait.
There will be a step. No.
Bell. Step up. So Step Up China, aka Step Up 6, with an all Chinese cast.
Okay.
That's in 2016.
So that was year of the no. What are we looking at here? Because Step Up, I'm seeing Step Up Year of the Dance in 2019. Okay, you know what? We need to get back on the Flash. We need to get
step
back to
Step Up Year of the Dance. Is it related? It's Step Up 6. Yeah.
I'm telling you. And you're right. There is a Step Up 7 apparently contracted. This is amazing. Wow. Step up 7.
That's so interesting to go from like a bit to finding out that your bit is kind of real in a terrifying way.
All right, man, we got to get back on track. We got to get way back on track. Way off, man. We stepped up all the way out of here, and we need to step up back to this episode. And again, I just want to apologize to the fans of that franchise, which can definitely carry its weight, apparently. So that's on me.
I mean, hey, look, and, you know, if it makes money, studios are going to keep doing it. So it clearly makes money.
It clearly does. And if you're a Step Up stan out there and I did you wrong in this bit, then let me know. That's on me. That is 100% on me. All right. But yes, this episode here of The Flash, every single episode, man, I know who was stepping up, and that is our boy John Wesley Shipp. Man, I thought about it this episode as he was cleaning up the shop, the magic shop, and how, like, you know, like they made him do this. Like, he had to do chores all the time on this show. And that was their special effects. Like, they were like, yeah, just make us all dinner. Yeah, make us all lunch. Yeah, clean up this room. Yeah, clean up this mess.
Eat this bowl of cereal.
He had to do it. Right. And it's great because, like, you know, they speed up the track and everything else. And, like, you know, everybody at home's like, oh, The Flash, he does it in, like, no time. Wouldn't that be nice? And then John Wesley Shipp is on set doing it all in that heavy costume. Like, yeah, it would be nice.
I wonder, this would have been a great question to ask John Wesley Shipp when we had him on the show. Whether or not, like, depending on the scene you're talking about where he's cleaning up the relic shop and stuff, if that was him or if that was, like, a body double or an extra wearing the suit and doing it.
Oh my goodness, I don't know. Yeah, that's a great question. We could actually tweet him and we could get that answered pretty quickly. Let's do that. Let's be sure to make a note and get that cleared. Because I have a feeling it was him. I mean, granted, he surely had a body double, but I have a feeling they made him do it. But yeah, man, I thought I did think about that when he was cleaning up the shop. What'd you think? He was obviously we've talked about the fact that we're dealing with an older Flash than Gustin's Flash, kind of a more mature take on Barry Allen. In this situation, he has dealt with, he's got kind of a young love interest. I mean, he's not interested in her, but she certainly is batting eyes at him.
Yeah.
I thought he handled that really, really well, especially for an era that wasn't really known for handling those situations very well.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, what are you going to do?
I'd take the Barry Allen route. I thought he did a really, really good job of that. In fact, actually, you know, one of the things I thought about throughout this episode and kind of what we've seen as a whole is that, you know, like, the Flash is, there's a lot of kind of like, you know, kind of social statements that are being made throughout the course of this, you know, 1990 television series that are still kind of relevant today. And, you know, sometimes it misses the mark. Sometimes it's spot on. And so it's really interesting to kind of go back and watch, trying to put yourself in the mindset of like a 1990s viewer, but also, you know, doing so through the lens of history and seeing it from the perspective that we have.
Yeah, you know, you're right about the social commentary and things that they're doing on here. And part of me is like, that's awesome. I'm so glad they were talking about this stuff back then. And then part of me is like, that was 30 years ago.
30 years ago.
And why 30 years is a long time for these sorts of issues to, you know, be talked about at a level and dealt with at a level that we shouldn't have them anymore. So like,
it's crazy.
Part of me is like super happy that we were talking about that in the 90s. And then the other part of me is like, why weren't the adults in the 90s, like, you know, making efforts and strides to do these things and work on these?
You want to know why? You want to know? I'll tell you why, Bill.
Why?
They weren't watching The Flash.
Hey-o!
And they didn't know how to step up. Step Up 2020. The Last Dance.
Oh.
Okay. Yes. We got a lot of villain hijinks in this. What did you think of Trackman, though? I feel like I kind of got us off on that earlier, but I really do kind of want to know. You know, last week we got with the kind of the assortment of rogues, assortment of villains. kind of different, almost kind of pseudo takes on comic book esque villains, if not necessarily directly derived from comic book characters. Here, that's kind of the case with Trackman. But what did you think, man? Did you think he was a good foil for Barry?
I mean, again, I'm a huge fan of cyberpunk, and this guy was like 90s cyberpunk personified. The special glasses to see stuff, the Nintendo Power Glove that's been modified. Like it was great. And the ability that he had, like, you know, that to control Barry and make him black out and stuff like that is really neat. And like, it also gave Barry some really cool fever mm-hmm. dreams, right? Where he's like, you know, a puppet marionette and like everybody's laughing at him and stuff. Like that's terrifying.
Yeah. The pixelated view screen too, where everything's kind of distorted.
Yeah. Like it was really, that's sort of an interesting kind of thing where it's like, And they go, like, it's interesting that I'm kind of surprised just by this way that the way the show does this. They didn't talk about, like, you know, the corpus. I mean, they mentioned it a bit about how the hemispheres of the brain can't communicate and stuff like that. And like, there's a treatment in epilepsy where you sever the part of the brain that connects the two hemispheres together called the corpus callosum. And, when you do that, it helps, people with seizures because like it prevents, you know, misfires from one side going to the other side and stuff. I'm not exactly sure how it works, but it works. And the thing that Barry was doing where he was trying to like see out of one eye and do something with the other hand is a real kind of thing that can happen with those sorts of surgeries and stuff. And there's also this thing called alien hand syndrome, which I won't get into, but it's really neat.
What?
Yeah.
You can get alien hands?
Alien hand syndrome. Yeah. It's like where when you sever the corpus callosum, there's weird stuff that happens. Like people will be eating cereal and their other hand will knock the spoon out of their hand. There have been uh-huh. people who've woken up with like their other hand trying to like choke them and like weird stuff like that. Alien hand syndrome. Look it up.
Okay. Huh.
But yeah, they're going into that and like the fact that they're, you know, hinting at this sciencey stuff without like spelling out everything, I thought was pretty neat because that feels like a little cookie, a little, you know, Easter egg for me and no one else because no one else cares about corpus callosum surgery and alien hand syndrome. But you know what? I don't care. I like Trackman. I like the cyberpunk aesthetic. The tech, you know, the implants that he had looked cool and they looked functional, right? Because you can like slide the glasses on top of them and then, you know, yeah. Like it, I don't know. I dug it. I thought it was really cool. And, you know, for a guy who doesn't have superpowers, what's the best way to protect yourself from the Flash? Well, mind control him.
It works. There you go. And you know, definitely rocking the VR before it was cool. So
yeah,
I dig it. I absolutely dig it. No, you're right. He did make for a good kind of convincing villain and definitely somebody who was kind of leaning into that time period and what was on people's minds. All right, let's talk about the ships, man, because you already made mention of of one. But I want to talk about the relationship that I find is like the central driving force of this entire show.
And that's got to be John Wesley Shipp and his dog.
No, although you know what, I wish that was what I was going to say. That's really good. By the way, you can't feed dogs that kind of food. That's not good for them. No, man, that's not the one that's the central to the show. I'm talking about Julio and Sabrina, man. Things are getting hot and heavy with them. And I feel like every single like second we get an update on Julio's love life, it cuts to plot real quick.
Well, I mean, you know,
where's Sabrina, man? I know she's not a teenage witch, so she's not just like poofing
maybe
around.
She is
like,
a
where
teenage
is
Sabrina?
We saw her once. She is played by the amazing Gloria Rubin. Where is Gloria Rubin? Where is Sabrina? Hashtag where is Sabrina?
Are we? Is this going to be our where's McSnurtle?
Yeah, this is going to be our get Sabrina back on the show campaign that we are going to start 30 years later on a platform that no one knew would exist. That's what's happening, man. We are going to get Sabrina back. That's what we're going to do. Get Sabrina back. Hashtag get Sabrina back. Hashtag where's Sabrina? Hashtag Gloria Rubin, who, by the way, is doing like she's had a lot of roles. She's had a very, very full career since The Flash.
Really?
Yeah, up until 2020, when apparently nobody was doing anything.
Roles in 2020? Do tell. I wonder why. There must be some crazy explanation for that.
No, she was a series regular on Mr. Roboto.
Mr. Roboto or Mr. Well. Robot?
Mr. Robot. Okay. Okay.
I was like, was this an attempt in the 70s after the popularity, or not 70s, of the 80s, after the popularity of the Mr. Roboto song to like make a TV show that's vaguely similar to the current Mr. Robot show?
I doubt it. No, she's on that. She's on Cloak and Dagger, which I have not seen, actually. I need to see that at some point.
Yes,
but
I do.
You know what she's not on, Belle?
I don't know.
She's not on this episode. But here's the thing. Yes. So more Sabrina. Let's give Julio a chance.
I mean, because we got to see more like Julio really. We got to see more of her weird friends that she tries to introduce to Barry.
That's that. You know what? That actually that could be a whole episode in and of itself. Yeah. But no, Barry and Tina, of course, is kind of the you know they're the will they won't they couple, right? And it's still questionable in terms of what exactly is Barry's relationship status. I have a feeling, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. If you know better, because you have seen some episodes in this that I have not seen. Did we just forget about Iris? Like, is she the cousin that went upstairs and stopped coming back?
Yeah, she's the Brady kid who went upstairs and never came down or whatever it was. The cousin, wow. Cousin Arlo, wow. I think it is, something like that. I don't know.
Okay. They broke up in Off-Screenville. All right.
Yeah, I don't know for sure. I don't think she's come back in some of the episodes that I've seen, because I've seen the Trickster ones. Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe she was there as a nod to the comics, but they didn't want to manipulate and change her character so much that she would actually, instead of being a reporter or, you know, a journalist or you know, something in that realm, they didn't want to make her a scientist, I presume. And so because of that, they had this Tina fill in the role of the, you know, scientist helping Barry out. And I mean, at least that's my guess. And so at that point, they didn't really have something. They couldn't really make a love triangle work, or they didn't want to make a love triangle work. And so they're just like, whatever. She'll go to Paris and everything's fine.
Huh. So Tina just kind of became the Felicity of this show.
I mean, I guess.
I mean, like, she's not, there's no comic book basis for her character. There's no reason per se, destiny wise, why these two should fall in love. But they kind of scooted the actual love interest off to the side. And this is the one that has the heat. Although I feel like this is intentional, like, whereas I don't know that Felicity was never intentional. That just kind of became a force unto itself. This seems more like from the get go, they knew that Barry and Tina, they were going to be the will they won't they that's really going to drive this thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. It's an interesting choice, and we'll see how it plays out, you know, and maybe Iris will come back and there'll be some love triangle stuff going on. But, you know, I'm not entirely sure that they will.
I thought it was interesting that Tina was at like the big banquet scene at the end when they toast the Flash, you know, quote unquote, wherever he may be. I was like, oh, I get why Barry's here, because he has kind of this relationship with the family. Why is Tina here? What, like I thought all of her stuff was kind of like secret.
I mean, it's I think it's just Barry being a jerk again, where he's like leading her on. He's like, I'm gonna take you out to dinner and a movie. Oh no, we're not dating. I'm gonna take you out to this celebration that I'm having with all these friends you helped and never saved their daughter, but you can't tell them anything about it, or, you know, explain how you assisted at all.
I thought you meant on the flip side, where it's like, Barry, come have dinner, we're gonna have this big celebration. Okay, cool. Is it cool if I bring my friend? Like, well, yeah, I guess.
I mean, she did house Paloma at Star Labs, and so maybe...
That's right, she did that. But I just assumed that was just Star Labs having terrible security, you know, every Star Labs in every single universe, man. Across the multiverse, it's the easiest thing to walk
yeah,
into.
Yeah, I mean, my assumption was that was a secret thing. I don't remember them telling her father that.
No, but you are right. Yeah, she did house their daughter, so it would make a ton of sense that she would be there. All right, fair enough.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, but I don't know if her involvement was secret or not, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, so that's the other thing too. I don't know. I guess Star Labs is much more public in terms of what they do in this universe, as opposed to where Star Labs, at least modern, you know, post Harrison Wells Star Labs is in the CW verse.
Yeah, it feels like this is more I don't know. It's something like, maybe it's like Area 51, where everybody knows what Area 51 is. You know, it's a military installation, but nobody knows what Area 51 does.
Gotcha. Now that could be the case. All right. So there you go. It makes sense. I really dug this episode on the whole. I thought it was fun. I thought we got some interesting kind of antics. I like the mixture of technology and magic, or at least perceived magic. I like when he said, like, oh, what is this, dark magic? He's like, no, dark technology, like this kind of like twist on things. I thought it also speaks to Barry as kind of that scientifically minded hero. I mean, if you want to kind of go, if we kind of pull a little bit from source material, if you kind of, you know, look at Barry and Wally, right? And even their approach to their powers. Barry was much more scientific. Wally was much more kind of connecting with kind of his powers on a cosmic level. And so I really think it's, I like what they're doing here. I thought it was a lot of fun. The villain I thought was like crazy campy, but also tied to this very, very real threat in this drug lord. It was a good fun time at the TV movies. What did you think, Bell?
I agree. I had a fun time. Like I love the 90s, you know, cyberpunk villain that we had that was, you know, like you said, this goofy kind of cyberpunky villain that's paired with this terrifying monster of a human in this drug lord. And you know, an interesting story about a father and a daughter, how, you know, they didn't spell it out immediately that this girl who they kept showing, who, you know, her friends at the church or at outside the magic shop at the beginning, like, why was she important? And then we learn, as the Flash learns, which is something I don't think you see a lot on TV anymore. But yeah, it was all these episodes I think have just been great. I think they've been wonderful in how the plot is structured, like the density of the story and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, you pair these goofy villains with these like horrible monsters, and it's sort of like, you know, it's this really interesting dichotomy that they have. And, you know, it's always good to see a Nintendo Power Glove being used as a prop. So,
yeah, no, that's great. In fact, I think that's going to lead us right into some Flash Facts. You want some Flash Facts?
Let's do it. Flash
Facts. All right, so as you have referenced several times already, Trackman, he that tracks on tracks, he was wearing the Nintendo glove. It was a manipulated, it was kind of a customized version of the Nintendo Power Glove, which would have been kind of in its, I don't know if you would consider it in its prominence in 1990, given that was like the last year that it was available.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the late 80s, it was definitely a thing, but at that point, when did the Sega Genesis come out?
Oh, what a great question.
Or the SNES.
That had to be later into the 90s, right?
So the Super Nintendo released in 1991.
And the Sega Genesis came out in...
Wait, what? No, that's the Mega Drive. Sega Genesis release date was in 89.
Is that right? Wow. Okay, fair enough. I was way off. I would have assumed that was later on down the road.
Yeah, 91 or 92, like with the SNES. Man, Sega always jumped the gun with console releases. Like the Dreamcast came out
a little too early.
Yeah, no, the Dreamcast came out too early for its time. That's why it is still probably one of my most favorite video game consoles, and it came out too early, and it was just people weren't ready for it yet.
Yeah, no, this is true. Much like this series, man.
That's true.
And which, who knows, maybe is part of the reason why they decided to go with more kind of original characters as opposed to comic book characters. However, Trackman did remind me at least a little bit of the character of the Puppeteer. It's a little known or a lesser known DC villain. As the name suggests, he has the ability to take control of folks in their brains. Let's see. His name was Jordan Weir. Jordan Weir. Jordan was first appeared as a Green Lantern villain. His shtick was a hypno-ray, which allowed him to control most individuals that came under his sway. He was also kind of introduced as a Teen Titans villain down the road and made a very brief appearance, I want to say, in the animated series as well. So there you go. In the show Justice League Unlimited, Puppeteer made a cameo in the episode called The Great Brain Robbery as kind of a member of the Legion of Doom. Makes sense. Even though he wasn't, you know, the reason for the Great Brain Robbery in that episode, it's a good nod, and it's kind of the subtle type of nods that you kind of expect Bruce Timm to work into those series, kind of in the background, letting you know, like, yeah, remember this guy? Remember this guy? He's not gonna do anything here, but you remember him? Yeah, he's here. Yeah, he's not doing anything, but he's here. So anyway, so I don't know, man. Maybe the Puppeteer was some inspiration, or perhaps it's just that's kind of the, you know, that's a kind of power you tend to see in, you know, super heroic antics and such.
Yeah.
All right. Any other thoughts on this episode, man?
I think I've covered it all.
I think you got it. Yeah. No, I'm excited to see what comes next. I've been enjoying this track down memory lane. We got way off on tangents this week.
I mean, yeah. Like so, this was a tangenty episode because
it was a tangential episode for sure.
Because cyberpunk is just, you know, it was huge in the 90s, and it's coming back, at least, you know, in video game circles today with the release of the game here on the 10th.
New people in this game. I can't even play this game.
Why not?
Well, because I don't have any of the new consoles.
It can go on Xbox One, I think.
But I'm not buying any new game. Like, I'm going to get the Series X once it's available. So I'm not buying a new game for, like, the old game.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah. So, anyway, you tell me if it's good. And I still have a lot of, like, RPGs to kind of play catch up on. But yeah, we'll see. It's got Keanu Reeves, so it can't be bad, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, because that's always true.
Whoa.
Whoa. You know, they should hire Keanu Reeves for Step Up 7.
Step Up 7.
That would be great.
Yeah. Step Up in the real world.
Oh.
And then it turns out that all of these Step Up movies were actually simulations where they're trying various different dance outcomes.
Yeah, I like it.
And it turns out that, you know, one of them awakens and becomes the one for the Step Up universe.
Whoa!
And so Neo senses that there is another one in a parallel universe. And then reconstructs his body digitally because he's in the Matrix code now.
Right.
From the end of the last movie.
He's stepping up in his code, yeah.
And with the machines, he works to liberate machine and human across the multiverse. And then the first one that they go to is the Step Up universe. Because there's a particularly cruel AI running that one, as evidenced by all the films that it has made.
This is not fair. I created this thing and I need to kill it because this is not fair. We have not seen the Step Up movie franchise. We are bashing something that was never made for us. This is not okay. I want to acknowledge the fact that this is not okay. I feel bad. Belle feels fine. And that's...
Hey, look, I like plenty of bad movies. I'm not saying these are bad. I've never seen them,
Right.
All I'm saying is that there are lots of bad movies that I enjoy, and it's fine. Like, if these movies are good, that's great. But if they're not, you know, there's no shame to be had about enjoying a movie that people don't like that society or whatever has deemed bad. There's nothing wrong.
I'm almost step up us up on out of this episode, man, because we've got way off the deep end. Hey, if you enjoyed the parts about The Flash, head over to iTunes, write us a review. It's a great way to help out the show. Of course, we also appreciate those who are making the show happen over at Patreon, patreon.com/TV Talk. Head over there. We will be giving away a box set of the 90s series, The Flash, to one of our amazing patrons. That's going to be coming here in the next several episodes. We look forward to that. And of course, we mentioned at the top of the show, we've got Grandma Esther's eggnog induced Christmas call-in extravaganza party, Flash TV Talk party, that we want you to be part of. That is going to be December 19th. That is Saturday, December 19th at 6:30 Central Time. So check your calendars and your local listings and all that kind of good stuff. And we will put out the Zoom call settings. It might get crazy. We might just kind of put it out there and then anybody can show up and, who knows? Who knows what'll happen? I don't know. Maybe there'll be structure. Maybe there won't. We'll see. Because professionalism. Maybe we'll do a Step Up for.
Maybe we'll just riff on party. Step Up for an hour and a half.
Is there a Step Up Christmas special? There probably is. You know what? Let's not.
A very Step Up Christmas.
Oh, wow. Well, and on that note, we'll be back in a flash.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.